All right, very good.
All right, for anybody who thinks that Wilcoxes are never pretty, don't look in that corner back there. That's Mrs. Manson. All right. All right. All right, so Job chapter 23. Then Job answered. Now, Eliphaz the Temanite has taken really his last shot in this thing. And as we saw last time, it's beginning to break down. They're not really being polite to each other anymore. They're throwing accusations at each other. So Job says this, "Even today is my complaint bitter. My stroke is heavier than my groaning." In other words, I'm groaning a lot, but my stroke's a lot worse. All right, what I have to groan about is a lot worse than what my actual groan. Okay.
I think the whole book of Job just makes me laugh at the sarcasm you find in it, and the fact that there was sarcasm so early in human race.
Yeah, that's yes. Sarcasm's good. All right. So now he says this in verse 3, "Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat." Now, again, here we have this thing with Job, who's saying, if I could just talk to God, we'd get all this straight. Okay? And of course, one of the things that his friends told him early in this book is, why don't you talk to God? And one of the interesting things is he doesn't. He's talking about what he would do if he could. Okay. Now, the other thing is this. If you keep in mind, we have seen with Job that he's doing two things. One, he's himself, but he's also picturing Jesus Christ. We saw in Job chapter 16, he pictured Jesus Christ on the cross. Okay. We saw earlier he had pictured Jesus Christ. Here he's going to picture Jesus Christ when the Father abandons him. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why? Because Job is a prophet. Therefore, certain things he's going to say, and that's why we're going to see another chapter or two. It actually calls this a parable. And Job continued his parable. Parable? This is what's really going on. But he's also showing you the suffering of Jesus Christ and what he does. Okay? So there's a dual purpose in it. And again, one of the things to keep in mind about the Bible is this, that many times in the Bible, things are for what we call typology. They're there for almost like a morality play, but that doesn't mean it didn't really happen. Okay? God can design things to really happen and show two pictures with it. Randy?
Just to keep up on context, definition of typology, please.
Typology is where, let me use an example. Joseph was sold by his brethren, okay? They threw him down into a pit where there was no water. But he gets raised up out of there and ends up at the right hand of Pharaoh. That's a picture of Jesus Christ, sold by the Jews, down into the pits of hell, raised up and sit at the right hand of God. It's a picture of it. It's almost like it's playing it out. It really happened. Joseph really did happen. But when you look at it, you're amazed at all the parallels that are there, okay? And so many times, things in the Old Testament will have parallels to the New Testament. The book of Genesis is just full of those parallels all through there, okay? To the point that liberal theologians say, well, none of that really happened. It's just morality plays trying to teach us about things later. But again, that's how they cope with that, okay? So we call that typology, all right? Job here, who really happened, but he's also showing us, almost like he's acting out ahead of time, the agony of Jesus Christ being abandoned by the Father. Do you get that?
Slow.
Okay. Is that you? Aha. It wouldn't be Sam. No, no, not. Yeah. All right.
Of course it'd be your kid.
All right. Here's another example. The ark. The ark was made by men. It's a thing made out of wood. What'd God do with the ark? He saved mankind. What's something else made out of wood that saved mankind? The cross. Okay. So you'll see how that God sometimes foreshadows things in that Old Testament for things that are going to happen in the New Testament. They're a foreshadowing. Okay? What's the word Paul uses in Galatians? These things are a...
Ensample,
but he's talking about Hagar and...
Allegory.
All right, allegory. Okay, that's the word I was looking for. The Bible word for that is an allegory, where you're telling a story to tell another story. Okay? The story of the little red hen. What happened to the little red hen? She asked all her friends, would you help me plant this? No, we won't help you plant it. Will you help me weed the garden? No, they won't help her weed the garden. All right, will you help me pick the wheat? No. Will you help me break the bread? No. So when she has the bread, they all want to come help. Why? Because she's got bread now, so they all want to help her eat it. She said, no, you didn't help me plant it. You didn't help me cultivate it. You didn't help me to pick it. You didn't help me to make it. You're not going to get any of this bread. Okay, we understand that, but it also is a story to teach children what? Something far deeper. The idea that everybody needs to share in work in order to be able to partake of it. So the little red hen is an allegory. It's a deeper story than just a tortoise and the hare. Okay? That's a deeper story. The hare was so sure he could beat that tortoise that he didn't even try to run hard. And he kept sitting down under a tree. Finally fell asleep under the tree. And the hare ended up beating him. And he's so ashamed. Okay? Why? Because he didn't take it serious. So oftentimes when you see somebody who's not taking something serious and then they lose, you say, the tortoise and the hare. Okay? Were they really a tortoise and hare? No, the tortoise and hare were an allegory. They were a story to help you understand that. Okay?
Or the classic boy who cried wolf.
Okay, Randy, you got it. That's an allegory. Okay? So Job really happened, but he's also an allegory. Okay? A typology. Something showing something to come. All right. And you'll find the Bible is full of those. All right. So he goes on and he says this. In verse 4, he says, I would order my cause before him and fill my mouth with arguments. Well, if you've ever been a mother, you know what it's like for somebody to fill their mouth with arguments. All right. All right. And verse 5, I would know the words which he would answer and understand what he would say unto me. Okay. In other words, when God talks, I'd understand exactly what he's saying. Then pick up a Bible and don't have a clue what it's saying.
With all this, being this is like one of the oldest things, does at any point would the Jews have understood that these were all things that were they were predicting to be coming?
I doubt it.
Okay.
I doubt that, you know, what she's saying is this, because this is, by most reckoning, the oldest book ever written, okay? If you make a book to be something with a plot and characters, okay? For example, the Egyptian Book of the Dead predates the Book of Job. But it's just the Egyptian Book of the Dead is just a bunch of one-liners, okay? The Vedic scriptures predate the Book of Job in Sanskrit. But they're not a plot with a story and characters that goes on. It's just a bunch of, again, one-liners and recipes and things of that sort. As far as an actual story with a plot that goes on, the Book of Job is the oldest book in the world.
Are the Dead Sea Scrolls that old?
No. The Dead Sea Scrolls are generally about 2,000 years old, somewhere in that range. What ended up happening, a group of people called the Essenes, and even that's controversial, okay? But a group of people called the Essenes, who were kind of a sect, a group of Jews who are a little more strict than many. It's been said, for example, they tried not to even urinate on the Sabbath. All right? Now, for me, I'd get real backslid. All right? But they broke away from the Pharisees and the Sadducees, started their own thing. So when Rome came in and began to sack Jerusalem, they took their writings and buried them in caves. Okay? And many of them are well preserved. And it's all over the place. There's a copy of the book of Isaiah that's word for word, be with you in a minute, word for word exactly like the Jewish Isaiah, but then you have Bible books that are just as screwy as can be. And so imagine this. Imagine if the town of Belfast was suddenly going to be destroyed and people ran into the churches and everything, just buried every book they could. You're going to find good books, bad books, in-between books. Just because you find them in 2,000 years doesn't mean they're accurate. Okay, and that's so the Dead Sea Scrolls are just all over the place in accuracy. Taryn?
Job's the oldest book, did Job, Genesis come after Job? Or did
it was written after Job, but many of the things that happen in the book of Genesis happened before. For example, if I sit down and write a history book right now, and I start out with George Washington, okay, does that mean George Washington happened right now? No, I'm writing about something 200 and some years ago. So when the book of Genesis was written, they write about something that happened a long time ago. But Job was written first, yes, sir?
Who wrote it? The book of Genesis.
Who wrote the book of Genesis? Moses. All right. All right, so going on a little bit more. He says this in verse 6. Will he plead against me with his great power? Okay. So he's imagining himself in a court of God, God pleading against him. You know, that's what an attorney does in court. Okay, the DA gets up and he pleads against you. Your Honor, this man was caught going 60 miles an hour through a school zone, you know, or whatever else. He's pleading against you. He's made a pleading in court against you. And so he's saying, if I see God, is that what he's going to do? Okay. Would he plead against me with a great power? No, but he would put strength in me. God wouldn't accuse me. He'd come here and help me if God was here. Okay. There the righteous might dispute with him, so should I be delivered forever from my judge. Boy, if I could just get together with God, I'd dispute with him, you know, and I'd be delivered forever from my judge. Okay. God would come here and take care of everything. And God doesn't, you know, and again, God doesn't think like we think. Okay. And Job's going to run into God. All right. But again, what's he telling you there? He really thinks he's okay. If God were here and looked at it all, I'd be okay. Okay. That's the average person really does believe, you know, God knows my heart. You know, I'd be okay if God were to see this. Okay. All right. So he goes on and he says this. Verse 8, behold, I go forward, but he is not there, backward, and I cannot perceive him. Okay? And again, he's foreshadowing Jesus Christ on the cross. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? I'm in this agony. I can't find God. All right. Now he goes on and he says, verse 9, on the left hand where he doth work, but I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand, but I cannot see him. He's complaining. I can't find God. All right. Verse 10, but he knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Now that's a tremendous statement by Job. There's a song, and when I am tried and purified, I shall come forth as gold. It's a great statement. And that shows you that Job is not without faith. Okay. He's told you earlier, 19, though the skin worm should destroy my body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. Because that is the one common thing that all saints of God in that Old Testament had in common is they believed in a resurrection. Okay? So he's saying, yes, I'm going through a terrible time, but once I've been through it, I'll come forth as gold. That's a great statement on Job's part. Now, of course, the other thing is this. He probably doesn't see that God's got to kick his butt some first. All right? He's probably thinking, if God saw me just like I am, I'd be fine. Just as I am, well, you know, without one plea. God probably doesn't like just as you are. All right? Yeah. God wants to change just what you are. That's what he wants to do. All right. So he says in verse 11, my foot hath held his steps. His way have I kept and not declined. So he said, I've stayed on his path. I've held on to what he said. I haven't declined from anything he said. Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. Now that again is a great statement, okay?
If Job would be the oldest book, how would he know the words of God?
Okay, because Papa Noah is the doctrine everybody's going by. God talked to Noah. They weren't written down in a book at that time, but they're certainly passed on.
So he would make commandments.
That's right. There's a covenant God made with Noah and told him these things. And whether or not a nation is righteous is whether or not they're following that covenant that was given to Noah. Okay.
Well, also, depending if Job would happen before the flood or after.
Job's after the flood.
Right.
Yeah. He bears witness. So, well, for one thing, it's probably a few generations after the flood. And he bears witness to some of the stuff in the flood. Okay. All right. So he goes on and he says, verse 13, but he is in one mind, and who can turn him? And what his soul desireth, that he doeth. That's a great statement again about God. God's of one mind, and he's going to do what he wants to do. Karen?
How come, is Abraham before, is Moses before Job, or is he after?
After. By about 400, 500 years. So Taryn, about 400 or 500 years after. All right. So he goes on and he says, verse 4. In other words, keep this in mind, Taryn. It's not that he read the book of Genesis, but he's heard Noah's words because he's only a few generations after Noah. In fact, Noah was probably alive at the same time as Job. Because if you go back and you do the genealogies and you go back through them, Abraham was alive during the lifetime of Noah. Okay, he would have known Ham, Shem, and Japheth. He would have known them. Go look how long Noah lived. Look when Abraham's born. Okay, that's why it says in the book of Genesis, and after his father was dead, he came into this land. I'll be with you in a moment. The point is this. Terah is Noah's father. He died after Abraham came into the land. And yet the Bible says in two places that Abraham came in after his father died. Because he's not talking about Terah, he's talking about Noah dying. Okay? Noah's the one that died. Why wouldn't Abraham go into the land of Canaan with Noah still alive? Because Noah cursed the Canaanites. Cursed be Canaan. Okay? In other words, that fear of Papa Noah, I'm not going in there. I don't care what God said. I'm not going into that group of people. And then when his father was dead, he removed him into this land wherein ye now dwell. Josh, and then his more intelligent little brother.
I guess my question is, this is one of those questions where it could easily be answered, most likely. If Noah was alive when Job was, then why wouldn't Noah go and talk to Job after what Job has been through?
Because I don't know if he's alive when these things took place. Job's an old man at that point, sir.
So 400 years from Job to Moses, that must not have been that long.
Well, 400 years. But you're thinking about it, and I like that, okay? It's not your fault that you're smarter than Joshua, so don't be upset about it. All right.
Way out the window.
All right, so he goes on, he says, verse 14, for he performeth the thing that is appointed for me, and many such things are with him. Therefore, I am troubled at his presence when I consider I am afraid of him. Okay? For God maketh my heart soft, and the Almighty troubleth me. Because I was not cut off before the darkness, neither hath he covered the darkness from my face. And he says, look, in other words, God's going to do what God wants to do. It's almost like a fatalism. You know, man, this is all just happened to me. I wasn't cut off for the darkness. I wish I had. Now I'm in the midst of it. Taryn, yes, sir.
I looked and found and Noah lived 357 years after.
I'm very pleased to hear that. I'm not sure it has anything to do with this, but I'm very pleased to hear that. All right? All right. So Job chapter 24. Why seeing things are not hidden from the Almighty, so they that know him not see his days. Okay? He says this, you know, people who don't even know God, basically, why are they living long lives? Okay? He goes to verse 2, some remove the landmarks, they violently take away the flocks and feed thereof. You know, this is a common complaint in the Bible, Psalm 73 being one of the most common ones. But you'll find it over and over again. How come these people are being so bad and they get away with stuff? I wasn't that bad, I'm not getting away with nothing. Okay? So he's saying, you know, hey, look what they get away with. Verse 3, They drive away the ass of the fatherless. They take the widow's ox for a pledge. What do you mean take the ox for a pledge? In other words, for collateral. Okay? Nothing would be worse than that. You have a widow. She needs to borrow money. You take her ox away. Now she can't even plow. You know, she can't hire it out or anything of that sort. You know, it's a cruel thing to do to a widow to take her ox for a pledge.
Well, also, how would she... If you just took her main way of making money, how would she ever pay you back?
And that's the point. And you'll find that complaint throughout the Bible, okay? Where they take away the very ability to make money and they take it away.
And that's also a way how the widow makes food.
That's right.
Yep, she uses her ox for plowing. All right. Now it says in verse 4, they turn the needy out of the way and the poor of the earth hide themselves together, okay? See... Then it says, verse 5, behold, as wild asses in the desert go they forth to their work, rising betimes for prey, and the wilderness yieldeth food for them and for their children. So he's saying these guys, in other words, they're not civilized. They just go out there. They're Bedouins. They're marauders. They're just out there doing whatever they want to do, okay? And there are like that all over the world. You go out in the world today, and there's Bedouins like that living somewhere. Tribal people who live that way, who, you know, they're not going to plant or anything else. They're just mighty, and they might be in the Amazon jungle. They might be somewhere in the Sahara Desert, somewhere in Nigeria, something like that, you know, going around and pulling stunts. Like gangs in cities will do that, okay? You know, they're not planting, not doing anything. They're like wild asses in the desert. They're just wherever they want to go. We're going to go. We're just going to steal things. We're going to take things. And he's complaining, and they're getting away with it, okay? And there's three rules for sowing. Number one, when you sow, you're going to reap. When you reap, it will be more than what you sowed. And when you reap, it'll be far more than what you sowed. So if you have sown evil, you're going to reap a lot more than just a little bit of evil you did. Okay? And it's going to come later than when you expected it.
Something I've learned through many different things and watching different people, sometimes evil you sow won't hit you. It'll hit either those around you or your kids.
It can work that way, yeah. Caleb, is he right? You're not sure? Okay, well, we're going to wait and find out then. We're not sure if you're right. Caleb's not sure. All right. Now it says this, verse 6, they reap every one his corn in the field, and they gather the vintage of the wicked. They cause the naked to lodge without clothing, but they have no covering in the cold. In other words, it doesn't bother them to take the last stitch in it, everything that people have. And keep in mind, in the Bible, again, the word naked doesn't always mean walking around butt naked. Naked in the Bible is insufficient clothing, okay? If it drops down to 30 tonight and you've only got a shirt, the Bible would say you're naked, all right? Why? You don't have enough clothing to be out there, okay? There is nakedness in the Bible that's talking about running around in your nevermores or whatever else, but be careful about that because often it's talking about just having insufficient, okay? So it leaves people without sufficient. One of the things it says in the book of Proverbs, is that if you take a poor man's cloak for security against him, give it back to him at night. Go back and hand it to him. Hey, use this to sleep tonight. Oh, you're going to need it. There's just a kindness to that. God will see that you did that kindness. All right. Verse 8. They are wet with the showers of the mountains and embrace the rock for want of a shelter. They pluck the fatherless from the breast and take a pledge of the poor. He's talking about the wickedness of these people and what they do. Loan sharks, Bedouin tribes, gangs, you know, all that kind of thing. All right.
It's amazing that people went just a few generations after, I assume, the flood, right? Because Job and them are alive. It's amazing how quick people can turn from, like, having their parents be, like, you know, Noah and his...
That's right. It's designed. One of the things to keep in mind during the book of Job and in the book of Genesis, God told Abraham that his children would go into Egypt, and there they would sojourn for 400 years until the iniquity of the Amorites be full. Mm-hmm. The Amorites are those general people who are out there. So a number of things happened. It says in the book of Genesis that in the days of Peleg, the earth was divided, not the world. The world's the system. The earth is terra firma, the ground itself. Geologists only in the last 70, 80 years have figured that out, the continental drift. The whole earth was pulled apart, okay? The Japanese are stuck over here, and the Inuits are stuck over there, and the Amazon's over here, and it's all pulled apart. So they're separated one from another there, and they're separated now with languages, which happened in the book of Genesis. But during Abraham's lifetime, some of those nations are still good people. How do you know that? Think of the thing of Gerar, what he tells the Lord. Wilt thou destroy a righteous nation? God didn't say, oh, there's none righteous. He agreed with him. Yeah, you're right. Okay, you are righteous. He said, I did this out of the integrity of my heart. God didn't say, your heart has no integrity. He agreed with him. Why? Because they're still following what Papa Noah said. Okay, it's been passed down from father to son, what Papa Noah said. So when God looks down spiritually, he still sees lights on in different places in the world. What happens when Israel's in Egypt is those lights slowly are going out. They're turned off one at a time. And finally, the last light is in the Midianites, who are direct descendants of Abraham. Jethro is the high priest of the Midianites, and he's the father-in-law to Moses. But he says, now I know that the Lord is the only God. In other words, he was on the ropes. He wasn't sure God was there. The lights were out, okay? God looked down and the lights are out all over the world. Whatever Noah taught is now dead. The iniquity of the Amorites is full. Then what happens? A horn blows and the Red Sea opens and Israel marches out in their armies and establishes the word of God and a tabernacle and the laws of God and a priesthood and a nation to be God's battle axe to spread the word of God in the world, okay? So Job is happening at that time when all the lights aren't out. About 400 years before all the lights go out, but they're turning out, okay? Slowly different people are just, you know, look at our own nation, okay? Certainly people don't believe what their grandparents believe anymore. You know, and those grandparents don't really believe what their grandparents believed. And you know, it's like Brother McVeigh was talking about. He says, nowadays, you meet a person in their 60s, chances are they're an ex-flower child. Okay? My generation are ex-flower children. I'm 67 years old. You know, by the time I got of age, people are already laughing the day of the hippies was over. You were mocked if you called yourself a hippie. That was years ago, you know. And that's, you know, in the early 70s, the day of the hippies are over. Then rednecks start going around with long hair and pickup trucks calling themselves hippies, you know. And that's not what hippies were. So the whole idea is slowly whatever used to be with Lawrence Welk and all that kind of stuff, nobody believes that stuff anymore. Nobody's following that stuff. It's all different generations. Well, the same thing happened during the days of Noah. The same thing happened during the days of Abraham. Okay, generation after generation, they just let stuff go. Okay, they don't believe that stuff anymore. They just let it go.
So this is probably far-fetched, but it popped in my head. So the Gentiles are actually coming out of like the Canaanites in them, or is that?
The Gentiles are anyone that's not a Jew.
So it's like they were renamed in the New Testament?
Yeah, it's just a New Testament name. Okay.
Because you don't really see the Amorites in them mentioned.
No, you don't. Now you see that every Josh.
Aren't the New Testament and the Old Testament are different languages, like written in different languages, aren't they?
They were.
So that means it's not a new name, it's just a different translation of the same name.
No, not necessarily.
No,
all right. No. I think the word you will find the word Gentile in the Old Testament, but no, most of the time they name specifically which different national groups. All right, so going on a little bit more, he says this. He's talking about how awful these people are. Verse 11, which make oil within their walls and tread their wine presses and suffer thirst. Men groan out of the city. In other words, these people are trying to build in the city. They're trying to do this stuff, but people are sacking them, destroying them. They're doing all this wicked stuff, okay? And And it goes on, men groan from out of the city, and the soul of the wounded crieth out, yet God layeth not folly to them. In other words, Job's saying, how come God doesn't just come and destroy those people? Okay? And again, the idea is that payday someday. God doesn't always pay on Friday. Okay? It's an old R.G. Lee, a preacher from the 1950s and 60s. That used to be his thing. Payday someday. God doesn't always pay on Friday. Okay? And there are people who have been totally destroyed by their grandparents, by their great-grandparents, decisions they made, okay? And again, is that God wants to damn the children? No. But if, you know, during the 1920s, there were people that when the Russian Revolution first happened, American communists who thought, oh, finally a land of freedom and wonder, and they moved to Russia, okay? And they moved there. And they stayed there. And by the time they found out how stupid they were, it was too late. They damned their children. They ended up in concentration camps. Their children were born there and damned into it, okay? Who did that to them? They did that to them, okay? They did that to themselves, okay? And, you know, there's decisions that you can make that will destroy people who come from you, okay? They're decisions you make. And those are the things you watch for. All right, so verse 13. They are those that rebel against the light, okay? They know not the ways thereof, nor abide in the paths thereof. The murderer rising with the light killeth the poor and needy, and in the night is as a thief. The eyes also the adulterer waiteth for the twilight, saying, no eye shall see me, and disguiseth his face. Ever wonder again why bars are dark? Anybody ever go into a bar? You know, I used to drink in bars. Never went into one where it was brightly lit. All right, nobody wants to go into a bar where it's just lit as bright as can be and everything. No, you want dark shadows and corners, and you know, and that's how people want it to be. Okay, nobody wants to sit there. And go ahead.
I got to tell a short story on that. Over in Olean, and we weren't real familiar with it. We thought we'd stop for a brew, and we went into Big Ron's in there, and it was so dark in there you couldn't see. And all of a sudden, because it was snowy outside and bright, and we got inside, and all of a sudden we realized it's right full of black people. And
yeah.
We didn't see anybody when we first went in there, but we just kind of materialized as we come in there. I don't know if we finished our beer or not. I think that we went. But.
Yeah, well, hopefully you were safe, you know. You know, I think that Kenny Randall, Pastor Randall's son Kenny, got mad and he went to help his brother in Montana at a church, and he got mad and decided he'd go get drunk. So he goes down into town, he walks into a bar, he doesn't know any of them, and he's sitting there at the bar stool, and he doesn't realize it's an Indian bar, and the Indians do not like white people in Montana. So he's sitting there drinking, and all of a sudden they start calling from the back. So it's Kenny Randall. He starts like, come on, bring it on, Geronimo, he's saying. They decide they liked him. His brother's panicking, runs into the bar to find him. There's Kenny Tank with all the Indians like him. But they like the guy that bold, you know. But the point is, bars are kept dark for a reason, all right?
Hey, he'll come pay me at white.
All right. All right. All right. So the thing is, verse 16, in the dark they dig through houses which they have marked for themselves in the daytime. They know not the light. For in the morning is to them is the shadow of death. If one know them, they are in terrors of the shadow of death. He is swift as the waters, their portion is cursed as the earth, he beholdeth not the way of the vineyards. Drought and heat consume the snow waters, so doth the grave those that have sinned. So this is just a general thing. Job's just griping. Look, here I am, I lived a pretty good life, now you guys think I'm as evil as can be, but look at these other people, look how terrible they are. And keep this in mind again, one of the first rules for self-righteousness isn't, well, I give this much money or I do this. No, self-righteousness is when you find people who are worse than you and compare yourself. I'm not like my brother. My brother steals from my mother. I never steal from my mother, you know. And I'm not like my uncle. My uncle, you know, does this and does that. I don't ever do what he does. I'm not like my neighbor, you know. And that's what self-righteousness is. You find people who do things worse than you, compare yourself, and you know, you can always find somebody who makes you look pretty good. Yeah?
I think I finally found the definition of
Yes, that'll work.
What?
The definition of hoy. Hoy is a Yiddish word the Jews use. And it's like a woman that never stops complaining or an old man that's griping all the time. They call it hoy. Hoy. It's a great word. This is hoy.
So every other, you know? So basically every other senior citizen in a home.
Probably when you're around, yes. All right, they may not be there that way naturally, but if you're there, it probably is what they do. All right. All right, so the thing is, he's going on, he's comparing how awful it is, but look at these people get away with it. And then he goes on. All right, 19. Drought and heat consume the snow water, so do the grave. Those that have sinned, the womb shall forget him. His worm shall feed sweetly on him. He shall be no more remembered, and the wickedness shall be broken as a tree. And when he dies, he's just saying, he just got away with it all. He just lived, and the worms will sweetly eat him. How's that? All right. How's that? How'd you like to, you know, make a hymn? Oh, sweetly eat my flesh, oh worm, you know. Well, it's Bible.
As my mom always says, my best way to die is by dying in bed.
Well, very good. I'll stay in bed more often. All right.
Yeah, but another thing mom says is that sometimes it's better to shut your mouth.
Because you're all right. At that.
So now it goes on and it says this. Verse 20, the womb shall forget him. We wrote verse 21, he evil entreateth the barren that beareth not, and doeth not good to the widow. He draweth also the mighty with his power. He riseth up, and no man is sure of life. Though it be given him to be in safety, wherein he resteth, yet his eyes are upon their ways. They are exalted for a little while. They are gone, and they are brought low. They are taken out of the way, as all others cut off as the tops of the ears of corn. And if it be not so now, who will make me a liar and make my speech worth nothing? Basically, he's challenging. Hey, if none of this is true, which one of you is going to stand up and say something about it? All right?
I bet the next chapter someone's going
to
stand up.
Well, Bildad the Shuhite, again, the shortest man in the Bible. And verse 25, then answered Bildad the Shuhite, said, dominion and fear are with him. He maketh peace in his high places. He's just going to make a general statement of God. Is there any number of his armies, Taryn?
Never mind.
All right. Is there any number of his armies, and upon whom doth not his light arise? How then can man be justified with God, or he that is clean that is born of a woman? So Bildad, he doesn't really have a way to answer Job, so he just says, look how great God is. Job, you think you're okay? You know, how are you okay if great God's that great? That's basically what he's saying. And then he goes on and he says, verse 4, how then can man be justified? How can he that is clean that is born of a woman? Behold, even to the moon, and it shineth not. Yea, the stars are not pure in his sight. How much less is man that is a worm, and the son of man, which is a worm? In other words, Job, you think you're so high and mighty, and you're just a worm like the rest of us. Now, Job's just going to go on for quite a while until he's interrupted by Elihu. Verse chapter 26, and Job answered and said, how hast thou helped him that is without power? Now, that's a sarcastic statement, okay? Oh, didn't you help me a lot? All right. Wasn't that a great statement? How savest thou the arm that hath no strength? How hast thou counseled him that hath no wisdom? And how hast thou plentifully declared the thing as it is? To whom hast thou uttered words, and whose spirit came from thee? Okay. In other words, where'd you get that thing from? Now look what he says in verse 5. Here's a good scientific statement. Dead things are formed from under the waters and the inhabitants thereof. And the dead things are formed under the water. Taryn.
What?
Are dead things formed under the water? What's a fossil?
Formed under the water.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so there's a good example right there, okay?
Fossil.
And again, think to yourself, most of those fossils came from the flood, okay? Anybody, again, go walk through Rock City in Olean sometime and just keep saying, there was never a flood, there was never a flood, all right? And, you know, you walk through Rock City in Olean, it's hard not to see that there was a flood, okay? The flood...
I feel like walking to the Grand Canyon and saying the same thing.
Right. Velkosky, and I've said this many a time, but some people may not have heard that, Velkosky was an atheist Jew who was a friend of Albert Einstein's, and he was a linguistic expert, meaning if somewhere on the earth an ancient civilization was found back at the turn of the 1800s to the 1900s up through the 1930s and 40s, they would bring Velkosky in to read it. It was said that he could read over 70 different languages that were extinct on the earth. So they would bring him in to read it. Velkosky, as an atheist, published a book stating the flood happened. They said, why would you say that? Okay. And he said, because every single civilization that he ever dealt with, no matter where they were, whether they be Inuits somewhere in Siberia or Alaska, whether they be Amazon river people, whether they be Aborigines from Australia, no matter where they were, they all had the exact same story of the flood. They all had the story. And he said, if I am a man of science, and no matter where I go in the world, whenever these people were one, they all had this same story. Even to the point that whatever Noah means in Hebrew, in their language, it meant the same thing. Okay? And he said, right down to that, they had the same story as the flood. And he said, so if I'm a man of science, I have to say that, yes, there was a time when the earth was flooded. Okay? And he ended up writing a book about it, which, and he failed in a number of places, but that's where the book, I think Ronnie's got a copy of it, called The Biblical Flood and the Ice Epic, written by a guy out of the University of Minnesota. And he picks up and cleans up Velkosky's science and shows you the absolute proofs that there was a flood on the earth that destroyed all of mankind at one time and everything came out of that. So if you were living in Job's time, can you imagine what you would have seen then? Evidences of that flood?
Right.
Okay? And all the dead things that have been formed from under the water and all the broken down things and all the different places you see them. And just to give you an idea, the Russians mine ivory. So they mine it. I thought ivory came off elephants. It does. But the Russians mine it from those islands up in the Arctic Circle. And they've been mining them for hundreds of years and have never gotten to the end of the ivory. Sir?
How do they mine ivory?
They dig for it.
like from mammoths?
Right, buried mammoths. There are so many under there that they have never stopped mining that ivory. That's why when people talk about banning ivory trade, they say, why? We're getting it off of dead mammoths, okay? And we know that people are illegally poaching elephants. Nobody wants that. But the point is, how many mammoths were there? The other thing is, keep in mind that during the Alaskan Gold Rush, that mammoth steaks were commonly sold during the Alaskan Gold Rush. So where they would go out, find a mammoth in the ice, cut meat off of him, and serve it to men, and they wouldn't die. The Russians have actually gone and cut open mammoths and found buttercups that they've eaten, not dissolved. So the thing is, how cold would it have to be to freeze an entire mammoth at one time?
That quickly, too, because...
So quickly that buttercup didn't dissolve. They went to the Texas Cattlemen Association and different butcher things and found that we don't have the technology to freeze an entire cow at one time. The best they can do is quarter a cow in order to freeze it, okay? So that you don't destroy any of the meat. So how cold did it have to be?
It had to be at least 4 degrees to freeze it all at once.
Probably at least 4 degrees. Maybe even colder, okay? But the thing is, how cold did it have to be? And they actually came out to Kelvin temperatures that only exist in outer space. The rings of the planets are that. And so the thinking was, and it could be, I don't know if I agree with this, but the thinking was is that Earth got caught up with another planet and that the ice came down, swept down onto the Earth and froze them instantly. Because we've always heard if you find a mammoth frozen, well, it fell in a crevice and froze there. The problem is 100 degrees below zero won't freeze that mammoth. Okay? 200 degrees below zero won't freeze that mammoth. And there are no places on this earth that are 200 degrees below zero, and yet over and over again, hundreds of mammoths have been found that well frozen. So the evidence is there that at one time. So what the guy does is he says, take a globe and hang it from the ceiling on a string. Anyone ever see the Sherwin-Williams thing where they show a globe where somebody's thrown paint at it? Spin that globe and then take a gallon of paint and throw it at that globe. Will it be on that globe evenly? No. It'll have a pattern. Then he shows you the pattern of the Ice Age. It's exactly the same. The Ice Age was not uniform all over the earth. Okay? The Ice Age had the exact pattern as if you took a bucket of white paint and threw it at a spinning globe. All right? So that's why they conclude then that the flood happened, A, when the two planets got caught in a binary orbit. The tidal forces brought all the water of the earth up, unlocked the waters of the heavens, opened the windows there, flooded the entire earth, okay? And then when they broke away, that ice sheet is there, and the earth then recovered from that, and that's what you have. But regardless of that, and go get the book sometime. Again, Ronnie's got a copy of it.
It's in the library now.
Oh, okay. It's in the library. The Biblical Flood and the Ice Epic. All right. And the guy, that's only one of many, many things he goes into. And he shows you without a shadow of a doubt that the earth once went through something like that in a lot sooner time than anyone realizes. Okay. And he's dealing in the idea of 6,000-7,000 years ago, not eons and eons ago. And when he's done, he's going to use nothing but science and show you that. And it makes a lot. You know, when you're in court, what happens is, let's say a full-blown court case goes, and there's 17 clues. A blonde hair found here, a thumbprint found here, some paint off of a 1982 Ford pickup truck. Here's all the clues, okay? The defense attorney's going to take these clues, and he's going to paint a story to make you look guilty. Your defense attorney is going to take the exact same clues, and he's going to write a story where no one knows whether or not you were involved in that or not. Okay? No, none of them are making up facts. They're all taking the same facts, but they're building a story. Then the jury has to ask themselves, which one of them painted the better story? Did that prosecuting attorney paint a story so clear that there's no reasonable doubt that happened? Okay? That's supposed to be it. Well, the point is, what this guy does with the biblical flood is he takes all the things we do know that are facts, and he builds you a different case of how they go together. Okay? And when you're done, you say to yourself, that makes a lot better sense than anything I ever learned in eighth grade earth science. It makes a lot better sense. And it goes back to this thing again. That's why I always ask an evolutionist, show me a two-celled animal. They don't exist. They never have existed. Do you realize you can find one-celled animals all over in the paleontological evidence? Okay, go find fossils. You'll find fossils of one-celled animals. They're there. If it's evolution and those one-celled animals came out of somewhere, lightning hitting something, and life forms, and there it's going, and again, a contradiction of the second law of thermodynamics. Something became, more complex or whatever by nature. But let's say it happened because of a lightning strike or something like that. How long would one-celled animals have dominated the earth? Then how long would two-celled animals have dominated the earth? Four-celled animals, eight-celled animals, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256 in height. All right? How long? Okay. And yet none of those exist in the fossil record. There's zero of them. None of them. They've never existed. They're fairy tales made up in public high schools that they once existed. And by faith, people have to believe it existed. Taryn?
What do you mean by two-celled, griffin?
A two-celled animal is not, a griffin is not a two-celled animal.
What do you mean by two-celled animal?
What's a one-celled animal, like a germ, an amoeba, is a one-celled animal. Okay.
Yeah. Okay,
all right. Right. Do you know how they communicate? With cell phones. All right.
I knew that was
all right. All right.
Jeremy needs to get a writing pad. This is just
Taryn?
Like, if there were two cell animals, we would see they wouldn't be any endangered animals.
Well, if there were two celled animals, it would mean that they're not endangered. But there never has been. They're just a myth. They've never existed. Josh, you've seen them?
No. If someone could compile all the biblical scientific evidence and bring it towards a large group of scientists, yes, I know, Mother. But if people could do that and they bring it and show a bunch of scientists, what's to say someone couldn't get that science changed?
You went to the Ark Encounter. Did it change anybody's mind? Because it didn't change their sin natures. Their sin natures, this is where Ecclesiastes 3 says this. God has put the world in their heart so that no man can understand the beginning from the end. That's why when a scientist goes on top of a mountain and he sees a trilobite, he said, oh, the mountain was once lower. It never occurs to him the water was once higher. Okay? He's always going to come up with the wrong idea. That's what it says. He put the world in their hearts. All right, let's go on a little bit more. All right.
The world's an idiot.
Well, the world's got its troubles. Okay. So dead things are formed from under the waters. Look at verse 6. Hell is naked before him, and destruction hath no covering. In other words, God sees it all. He stretches out the north over the empty place and hangeth the earth upon nothing. There you have it. Okay. Did ancient people believe the earth floated on waters? No, they did not. There he hangeth the earth upon nothing. Okay. He says so.
What? Preacher.
Yeah.
But what about the earth being in the water and out of the water?
It's the earth that was.
Before this one.
Before this.
Okay, so that means...
When God originally made it, it was in the water and out of the water. But he turned it over.
Right.
That's what you see. That's why you find it in Genesis underwater.
Right.
And God separates the water and the earth is hanging on nothing currently.
Then he creates creatures after that.
Yeah. That's right. Yes. All right. Now it goes on, and he says in verse 8, he bindeth up the waters in his thick clouds, and the cloud is not rent under them. Brother McVeigh preached a message here probably 10 years ago or so, maybe 8, 9 years ago, about clouds. And he just talked about, people don't realize, those clouds are tons of water in those clouds. Tons of water, okay? When you think of a good gushing rain, tons of water. Taryn?
It said a cloud, a regular size cloud, could weigh up to had as many raindrops as I think 5 or 10 large planes.
Okay, there you go. So what happened? He bound up the water in the clouds. Okay, and then it goes on and it says this, verse 9: He holdeth back the face of his throne and spreadeth his cloud upon it. He hath compassed the water with bounds until the day and night come to an end. The pillars of heaven tremble and are astonished at his reproof. He divideth the sea with his power, and by his understanding he smiteth through the ground. Verse 13, by his spirit. Notice a small s there. Why? Okay? Be with you in a bit. It's a small s spirit because it's the creating spirit of Jehovah God. Who's the creator? By him are all things made, and not anything made that was made. That's Jesus Christ. Therefore, it's a small s spirit. It's not saying he's not God. It's just a way of designating that's Jehovah God, the creator. The King James Bible is the only Bible that does that. That where you go through, those S's will tell you a story, whether they're capital or whether they're lowercase S's. Okay? So, by his spirit he hath garnished the heavens, his hand hath formed the crooked serpent. Lo, these parts of his ways, and how little portion is heard of him, but the thunder of his power, who can understand? Now, I'm not going to go into 27, but look what 27 says in verse 1. Moreover, Job continued his parable. Isn't that something? How is it a parable?
When you're done with that, sorry, go ahead.
It's a parable in the sense he's showing how God made things and what he does, but also Job himself is a parable. He's Jesus Christ in trouble on the cross. Okay. All right, Ms. Jody.
So one of the things, no, you said that, but I still have my question. So I never understand why, because God said that he gave him to Satan to try, but Job seemed, like, why? But would it have been just to shake Job up and to show Job his unrighteousness?
You know what the Apostle Paul says? He talks about people in the New Testament. He says, turn them over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh. Why? That they might learn not to blaspheme. You know what Job's learning? He's been turned over to Satan for the destruction of his flesh, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He's learning not to blaspheme.
So is it maybe just to make him a better...
Yeah. It's going to make him a better person. He's going to learn not to blaspheme. Okay? And the sad part is you don't see anything that really... It's God that started it. Okay, but that's where Paul got it from. Paul got that out of the book of Job, where Job was turned over to Satan for the destruction of his flesh. And when it was all said and done, he gave God the glory. He didn't blaspheme at all. And Paul says, if you have somebody in the church who absolutely won't obey, you get together and pray and turn him over like that. Okay, see if we can get a happy story like we did with Job. Okay, Ronnie Skolt, will you close us in prayer?
Father, I want to thank you for the time that we've had here. All the questions and all the answers. We thank you, mostly God, that you've put your word down for us to have whenever we would look at it, to read it. And, we just pray now, Lord, that you keep us all safe and that it be your will we come together again on Sunday morning, Lord. And cause us to have remembrance of the things that we shared this evening. In the name of Christ, amen.
Amen.
Let me show you something over here.
Straight down this road.
Well, down this road, to your left.
Right.
Kind of going toward the direction of Latchmore's, is that right?
The other way. So it's going towards Latchmore's.
Yeah, there's a lot of small towns around here, so I'm trying to figure out which one's which. I got some additive for cement. I'm doing a little bit of cement at the house, and I wanted it to set up a little faster so it doesn't get too hard. And I found it for the hardware store in Franklinville.
That's not one of the stores.
So I saw that it was half an hour away, and for some reason I had it in my head that Franklinville was in Pennsylvania. And I looked at the map again, and I was like, it's not Pennsylvania. So thankfully I didn't start driving that way. How long have you been at Northern Lights?
Yeah.
You like it? Yeah, it's pretty consistent. Yeah. You know, 40 hours or more or less? What is that? 15 hours. You been overtime for 10?
10-hour days, 5 days a week.
I remember when I was testing.
So when it slows back down, we'll be down to 4 days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the things
I
love. But it's very rarely when we slow down to 4 days.
Especially this time of year. This time of year seems like we're not busy. Going out of Christmas, people use way more candles than we
do. A lot of weird fragrances.
I probably get straight, like, I get headaches when I'm around lots of different artificial fragrances.
Luckily, the pouring is in another building across the road.
The Emporium?
No, I'm pouring where they pour the candles.
Oh, okay, so you don't smell it as much.
I work in a packing room. Label and pack them in their cases.
Must be a lot of candles. And it keeps you busy full time moving product.
Yeah.
That's a lot of candles. It's not like a handful. It's like bubbles.
Thousands. Countless amounts of different styles and fragrances.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of different. There's a lot of things you can do.
He didn't answer. He didn't answer.
You guys have already been doing stuff
Another P test?
Yeah, I was thinking about it.
And it's not as dark as it was.
And my oldest turned.
Started out as a P test.
She asked us if she could.
And then another one, he kept getting darker. But she did got lighter.
We're a big family, and so we have parties for the kids every time they have a birthday.
She's nervous. That's why she's on here. Taking it easy. They told her to take baby out.
So my old mom said, all right, we said, all right.
Why? Or what?
You can have a party, but here's the thing.
Well, but something about women who wash babies or are prone to
set things up.
Something
so
about baby ass
for that. House houses,
So yeah, that's all I got. I'm gonna watch. Right. She's gonna bring Karen over tomorrow while she goes to her appointment.
Yeah, I say, well, next time you get a
but, I mean,
birthday party, we don't expect you.
So don't worry about bothering her. It's fit for her to be occupied.
She got a party.
Well, so back in
eight, she got a party.
She didn't answer you.
No, it's Nancy.
She gets like that sometimes too, you know.
Well, no,
it's been a little
she
while.
She kind of withdraw a little bit right now. She's a little bit right now too.
Probably
coming up on 12 next summer. So
what's that?
She's getting close to the halfway mark already. I think she's 16 there pretty soon. You know, it's pretty crazy. But it seems like so far away.
Oh, really? I don't. I'm
waiting. 16. It's kind of like way down the road. So yeah, it's not that far.
Well, I mean,
and when
so
my wife and I, after
so
our wedding, we
knew
in
the country that I don't see anything like that. It's not like really much or not
after the trip.
Pump that could have happened, you know.
Washington, Michigan.
And
just drive across the country. I work for a hotel. So
I can't see Charles super cover.
It's like
holding anything like that. Insane.
It's $50 or
so.
$50 where you normally be paying.
That's a tough thing to hear because I know you're never going
to
let that go. You know?
So that's pretty nice. So we got a really inexpensive rental car. Start driving out west. And we had spent.
I don't have words for this. I'm smiling because the thing I do when I get nervous and don't know what to say.
Pretty much all our money on the wedding. We had spent most
we
of our money, so we took. We were hoping that people that were at the reception really give wedding gifts. We're hoping that whatever it is, you know, we'll use that to pay back our credit cards. You know, we have credit cards. We didn't really have much money in the bank to pay credit cards off. So we got out about as far as.
Yes, he didn't say anything about that.
Driving across. We're headed up because we hadn't really gone to the wedding. We took it all with us, you know. But we, along the way, we were reading the cards and, you know, seeing what money was given and stuff. So it turned out to be something like $2,000 because we had a pretty good group of people there. And I think it was $2,000, maybe somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000. And so we're adding things up. What we spent at the wedding, we have left in the bank, which wasn't much of anything. And we're thinking about what the hotels cost and the gas costs. And so we realized, you know, if we drive all the way out to Washington, we might be able to make it and get back and have enough money to pay things off. But we're literally going to have zero left. We just have nothing left. And so we talked about it. We said, you know, I don't think we should. We should go all the way to Washington. We made it to Yellowstone, which is Wyoming. And it was like another, I remember, 12, 14 hours, something like that. It was quite a ways past Yellowstone, out to the west coast. And we decided, rather than driving all the way to the west coast and all the way back, we spent one extra day at Yellowstone. What we talked about, we said, you know, someday, you know, like for our 10th anniversary or our 20th anniversary, maybe we can fly out to Washington and just get a plane ticket and fly out there. And it's just so we can make it to the West Coast together, you know. And it happened. It was crazy because it was it was coming up on our 10th anniversary, and I realized, wait, this is our 10th anniversary. It's right now. Like, this is it. Because you think about it down the road, like it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna just never. It's like it's never gonna come. It did. It was so strange thinking it had already been 10 years because it seemed like it went so fast. And so we went out, we flew out to Oregon, we went to Seattle, Oregon, and then flew out to Seattle, and flew out from Seattle, and got to see it. So we made a memory. But it was crazy how fast the time went.
So
how old is your oldest? Okay. I'm still trying to figure out who goes with who here. So your family's usually spread out in different places. I know Trevor's 1 year, right?
Is Dustin one of yours? Rayanne, right?
Trevor or Zane.
Zane, yep.
He's down with William Furniver.
Okay.
And you got Trevor, then you got Katie.
Okay, yep. And Katie likes to hang out with one of my girls especially. I think Lydia. I think Lydia and Katie hang out especially. So...
Your little girls are the only little girls around her age.
Yeah.
So she just adores all of
them. Yeah, it's good that they have someone to play with.
When your kids aren't here, she's hanging with the older girls.
It's harder to find a group of people your age sometimes, especially in a small church. We went to a church that was half an hour away when I was growing up, and it was hard for me to do a lot with other friends, we went to a small church too far. From?
Corning.
Okay. It's not too far.
No. Wife, she's originally from.
Like, literally. Black Creek? Oh. I didn't know that. That's pretty interesting. So, are her parents still in this area, or brothers and sisters?
Her mom lives in this area.
Well, how are you?
Great.
Amen.
Rained all day.
Yeah.
It rained all day there last year.
I read it. I've seen it. I'm like, who's the one next?
Anita.
Yeah.
Lord, no.
I'm getting away from the cold weather. I'm going out last Saturday.
That was
good
place.
What part of the West?
Utah. Utah, Idaho, and back home.
Utah, Idaho, or back home.
Yep.
You're not going to see any snow out there?
Oh, yeah, I spent $153
on the
campaign. It was $153.
Yeah, some of the, especially Northwest, it gets snow.
North of 305 there this morning. The guy comes down and Dodge, his hood's all full of snow. And the house has got snow on the roof. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
The road,
we drove through a pretty good squall on Tuesday, and it was enough to, it was hard to see, and the field started turning white. It came down fast. It was just over near Ellicottville. We went up to Vogel, so we're still registered up there, and they worked on one. So we drove up there, and that was the first time we saw it.
And then the attorney general was Dino. So
that's that
ready or not, here
the,
comes
the lake effect starting up already.
Yep.
Water's warm, the air is cold.
Yep, this is the time where it can
yep. Start rolling.
And she was
having a until the lake freezes.
Have a good night.
You too.
Give him the
watch.
We got all the
yeah, we're taking the four-wheeler to the shop.
Gotta put these young ones in the sheet.
Okay.
We use four-wheeler power, right?
Really?
Oh, that's nice. It has a hydraulic blade.
It runs by the winch, but anyway.
Okay. How do you, does it take a while to raise it or lower it? No. So you say a winch, is it a lever that you like pull back or do you have to crank it?
Electric winch.
I gotcha. It's an electric winch. Did you find your buddies in there?
Go.
No.
Yes. No. Yeah, her mom grows up by you guys.
I know. She lives right around the corner. Close to that school. Yeah.
I went into their house.
I saw your wife drove by the one day that John, Mark, and Tim had come over to help me. Tell us that. Set stuff. They helped. We're helping with the roof.
Hey, your shoes. Let's go.
And I asked your mother. I said, "She's all the shoes."
What's
the other side?
Yeah.
She said,
yeah.
Yeah.
He was because
yeah. What time do you start in the morning?
Yeah. Early at the house at 4. It's gonna be 4:45.
That's early. Yeah, I haven't had to do things that early in a little while. Is that your normal schedule?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
5 to 3:30.
Well, it's kinda nice to get done early.
All right,
we'll be ready either way.
Well, that's kind of fascinating. The last 20 minutes have all been recorded, so I hope nobody say anything stupid.
Yes.
Well, I mean, some of the stories that were told tonight anyway, it doesn't matter. It can be worse than that.